I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. In 2006, Colin Angus and his then-fiancée Julia Wafay were traveling from Moscow to Vancouver only using human power, boat, bike, and foot, which meant rowing across the Atlantic Ocean. They see on their atlas that there are many inland waterways across Europe, and Julie half-seriously suggests that they could row themselves from Colin's parents' homeland of Scotland through her mother's homeland of Germany through to Syria, where her father's from. And they did just that last year. In their new book, Road Trip, From Scotland to Syria by Oar, the Angus couple highlight their unique, arduous, and sometimes dangerous journey. In 2007, the Angus duo were married, were named National Geographic's Adventurers of the Year. The book is published by Doubleday. They'll be screening a film of their journey first Thursday night at the Hollywood Theater on West Broadway at 8 p.m., and then Saturday night at the Denman Place Cinema. Visit their site for more information, angusadventures.com. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Colin and Julie Angus. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Angus.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Were your parents, Julie, were they into much of what you do growing up?
No, not really, to be perfectly honest. They were very worried when I left on the expedition before this one, rowing across the Atlantic Ocean. I grew up in a very sort of protected household. I'm an only child, and my parents always worried about me. They didn't even let me play sports as a child because they were concerned that I might hurt myself. So it was a big shock for them. But having said that, they have been very supportive, and they're much more understanding of it now.
And Colin, your parents, growing up, were they into what you do now?
Well, my mother introduced us to the outdoors at a young age. She was a single mother with four kids, and she was a teacher, so as you can imagine, she had her hands full. But on occasion, she'd have time to take us out into the mountains hiking, and just, you know, regular sort of afternoon or multi-day short sort of hikes. But for me, that was a real eye-opener, and I really loved just being out in the wilderness and this whole concept of, pushing yourself around, just using your muscles, and that's probably partially where I was inspired from. But also, she's been quite supportive, offering moral support as we've done these different expeditions.
Well, one of the goals that that the both of you have showed us by your travels and your adventures are the methods of by which one can travel the world, whether it's walking or rowing or cycling. What do you think you learned about the world, about our world, as a result of using these modes of transportation, Colin?
Well, one thing that I guess I'm continually surprised, really, you're never really fully aware of just how far you can travel using your own power or how much you can move until you actually go out and try doing it. And oftentimes with these different journeys, we feel kind of overwhelmed with the challenge we take on, and there's always that big question is, you know, are you going to be able to do what you plan on doing, going around the world by human power, for example, just rowing across the oceans and trekking through these wild places. And to me, it's just this whole idea of just putting in a little bit each day, well, a lot each day, I guess, but, you know, bit by bit, and it all adds up. And traveling from Scotland to Syria, for example, we had, between the two of us, we were carrying almost 300 kilograms of gear. We had no support vehicle. We were carrying all this stuff with us, and that's, of course, the rowboat, the bicycles, the trailer, all our AV equipment, and really adds up. And we traveled 7,000 kilometers, and the fact that we were able to move that all that stuff for so far, I still find kind of mind-boggling, and at the same time, it's very rewarding, that feeling of accomplishment when you get to the end and you've traveled down all these canals in your rowboats.
Julie, do you have a favorite mode of transport yourself?
I have to say I am quite partial to rowing. It is a great way to move on water. It's nice because you're using all your major muscle groups, so your legs and your back. You're also moving quite quickly. On placid waters, we'd move about 10 kilometers an hour, and on the Danube River or the Rhine, when we're traveling with the current, we'd get speeds up to 18 kilometers an hour. And then, of course, you can pack a lot into the boat, and it allows you to explore places that are hard to access any other way. So on the Danube River, we had the opportunity to see some amazing sights, some Roman ruins, a huge statue carved into a cliff face because we were on the water.
Now, I read somewhere that you'd both met at a bus stop. Is that correct?
That's right. We met at a bus stop in Vancouver, and both Julie and myself were en route to the Vancouver Sun Run, a 10-kilometer running race, and we were both at the same bus stop, and it was very busy that morning. There's so many runners heading off to the race, and so one bus after another went by completely full, so they wouldn't stop. And we started chatting, and Julie was about to head on a trip to Nepal, and I was quite interested in Nepal, but at the same time I was very interested in Julie, so I asked her if I'd be able to see the pictures, and she got back, and so that's how it all began.
Do you remember where this was?
Yeah, it was in Kitsilano. It was on Broadway at the corner near Vine. Yeah.
Did you still go there, the two of you?
We do, yeah. Not recently, but we spent quite a bit of time in Vancouver, and we do frequently go through that area.
We live in Comox now, but we come to Vancouver quite often, and we come every year for the Vancouver Sun Run.
Julie, when you were the one who suggested going from Syria to from Scotland to Syria, you were half serious, were you, when you thought it up?
I was. You know, it's so appealing looking at the rivers and canals and imagining what it would be like to travel on those instead of the roads. And when we were cycling through Europe on the previous journey, we were often on busy roads. So I think that's why the waterways appeal to me so much. But I said it half seriously because it's such a long distance. It's over 7,000 kilometers. And at first, you know, I wasn't really sure if it was entirely interconnected by waterways and if we would be able to row from the North Sea to the Black Sea.
And Colin, what did you think when you heard the
idea? I thought it sounded like a great idea. And it sort of expanded. I mean, initially Julie was kind of suggesting going from the North Sea to the Black Sea, but then we started thinking about this whole family component, sort of coincidentally, her family coming from Syria and mine from the top of Scotland. We could sort of expand both ends a little bit and travel the whole thing and connect her on sort of ancestral routes, which was sort of another appealing side to the whole journey. It's, you know, you're getting to see all these, you know, beautiful places in Europe and the Middle East, but you also have this wonderful opportunity to explore your own roots and your own ancestry through the journey.
Now, you obviously have to plan for where you're going. In the back of the book, there's a bit of a diary in terms of how many kilometers you spent during the day. When there's a break here, for example, in some of these places, do you plan those out as well, or?
Well, we planned to take a day off every week because we were doing a lot of the logistics, and we had an educational program running with the expedition. It was where students got involved, and there was a learning program, and we had this feature called Choose Your Own Adventure, which is where we posed a question to the students, and each week they would vote on it, and it would usually be something logistical. For example, one of the first ones was, should we row across Loch Ness or should we ride our bikes beside it? So that day off a week allowed us to do all those activities.
And in terms of how many kilometers you do a day, is that something that you've planned out ahead of time?
Not precisely, just because you know, there's so many variables. So we roughly decided, you know, we should overall be doing, you know, this many kilometers per day, but on a daily basis, depending on, you know, the difficulties of getting through the waterways, the weather, or if we're on the roads, you know, the number of hills, it would change quite a bit. So we would average probably through the journey, it would be about from 30 to about 60 kilometers per day.
On this journey, you obviously get to meet a lot of people. And what did you notice about some of the people that you encountered?
Yeah, you certainly do get to meet such a range of people, and that's the beauty of a trip where you're completely exposed to the elements and you're out there all the time in the pouring rain or in the sunshine, moving forward through these little villages and towns. And people would always, you know, or very often stop because it's just such an unusual contraption, especially when we're on the roads. We've got the, you know, 18-foot boats being towed behind our bicycles, which certainly raises a few eyebrows. But at the same time, it's also a great excuse to start conversations, and people would ask where we're going or if we're expecting a lot of rain, sort of half-jokingly. So we really got to meet, you know, such a range of different people from different cultures. We went through 12 countries and everything from Britain to France and through Eastern Europe and then of course Turkey and the Middle East, and you get to experience those subtle differences between each nation, and the common thread between all of them was there's a lot of friendly and very hospitable people, and that remained throughout the journey, so it was really quite heartwarming.
Julie, you have a degree in biology, do you?
I do, yeah. I have a master's from the University of Victoria.
You got to see the environment firsthand and how it's developing in the sort and what we're doing to it. What are your observations about how people in the places that you've been, how they're seeing the environment and living through it?
Well, there's certainly a lot of waterways that are still at risk. For example, the Black Sea, it collapsed just over a decade ago, and it really hasn't recovered. We saw a lot of green slime on the Black Sea just by the coast, and you don't see very much besides jellyfish, which is a sign of an empty ecosystem. But at the same time, you're seeing a lot of water systems that people have focused on recovering them, so they're protecting the waterways by putting in place various rules. So I think there certainly are rivers and canals that are much healthier now than they were a couple of decades ago, and I think there's a growing emphasis on the importance of protecting the environment, not only to support the animals and other living systems that use it as a habitat, but also to support fishing and transportation for the health of the people that live in the area.
Colin, where did you guys marry?
We got married in Comox on Vancouver Island, so that was that's where we live now, and that's a spot which we really like and treasure. So it was a perfect spot to get married.
And so this was the honeymoon, right?
This is basically the honeymoon, yeah. We had like a short mini honeymoon, which was basically testing out the gear, and then the longer extended version, which was doing the Scotland to Syria journey. So very appropriate. It was a great way to meet the in-laws.
Now, in terms of the strain on one's relationship, I mean, people must ask you that all the time. I want to ask first, you weren't in any physical danger like you were crossing the Atlantic, or were you?
Well, there's the inherent danger is just, I mean, the duration of the trip and some of the waterways can be quite stormy, so there definitely were, harrowing moments on this trip. So we do have the similar stresses, maybe not quite the same as a hurricane rolling over the boat, but as you say, it's certainly like with a relationship for traveling for that length of time with so many difficulties, it can put stresses on. So it's very important. I mean, you have to be very compatible in the way you work together and be able to work through your differences. So it's something which on our previous expedition crossing the Atlantic, that was sort of the ultimate litmus test. So we knew we'd made it through that one all right, which gave us added feeling of confidence that we would be able to do the Scotland to Syria.
Julie, were there challenges on your relationship, though?
Oh, there certainly were, and I think there always will be when you're together for such an extended period of time, and you're unhappy or you're stressed at times or it's difficult, and sometimes it can bring out the worst in each of your characters. So accepting that and recognizing that we're not perfect is really an important part of making the expedition work and of making your relationship work. And I think with each of us, we've kind of learned where our faults are and how we best work together through our previous expedition. So that comes in handy not only on the field, but also in our marriage when we're back at home.
It just seems to me that after all this, that you can withstand anything. Is that correct or no?
Sometimes. We hope so.
Yeah.
Like that,
but,
yeah.
But, I think, you certainly do face some of your biggest challenges when you're in an expedition environment. And when I was younger, I spent quite a few years sailing through the Pacific Ocean, and I met a lot of couples who had strong relationships on land, and they decided to go on these extended sailing voyages. And surprisingly, a large number of them had relationship failures on the high seas. And I think it's just the added stresses and being in a boat where, you know, it can be quite a volatile environment. So I think, there's a lot of parallels between that sort of world, being in a sailboat, voyaging the high seas, or doing our own kind of expeditioning in rowboats.
Colin, had you spent much time in Scotland growing up?
No, I was born in Vancouver Island. Both my parents are Scottish, though. So my mother and father their families come from the northern tip of Scotland, and they were, my mother was born in Edinburgh, and my father was born in Glasgow.
Well, when you're in Scotland, not only on this journey but in other times, how do you react to your roots? I mean, do you feel a certain, I don't know how to put this. Do you feel close to it at all?
Definitely. I think, you know, the fact that it's, you know, a strong part of my heritage. I've heard all the stories of Scotland through my mother, and when I was a little kid, we went out to visit some of the family. So I have warm memories from that. So, you know, Scotland does feel kind of like a second home to me. And I think, you know, there's always been a part of me that's curious to learn more about my heritage. You see the Hollywood movies and that sort of thing, but to be immersed in this area where your family worked the land, where they fished for lobsters, and to actually see how rough and rugged and tough that part of the world is. And we had a really tough time getting through there. We started in late winter, and it was just nonstop gales and shrieking winds and rain and snow, and we're very slowly moving through that, and, you know, feeling quite miserable at times. And to think that, my ancestors were there and they had to deal with all that. And I got to meet also the remaining relatives that still live there. And as soon as I think they're the tougher ones, the ones that didn't flee that sort of tough, sort of desolate part of the world. So it was really quite neat to see that.
And Julie, in terms of identity, did you find that you found it on this journey, perhaps?
I did connect with my relatives both in Germany and in Syria, and during my childhood I actually went to Germany quite a bit, and I learned the language at a young age, so I kind of always identified more with that part of my heritage. Syria was always this sort of mysterious foreign land for me, so it was very exciting and interesting to finally arrive there and to realize just how much family that I have there, not only my aunt and uncle, but lots of cousins and extended family. And for me, that was particularly heartwarming because I have a very small family in Canada. I grew up as an only child, and to suddenly have all these people that embraced me and loved me, it was very heartwarming.
At all on this journey, did you feel at home?
Definitely, and I think, like, with our story, it's a very typical one for North Americans. You know, both Julie and myself come from immigrant families who have moved from very different parts of the world to Canada to start a new life, and there's a feeling of disconnect from where you originally come from. You know Canada, you know your parents, but that's sort of where the line ends, whereas people who have been brought up in Syria or Scotland, you know, there's this whole family interconnected tree that they're very familiar with. And I think, you know, by going back and learning more about your roots and your family is something that sort of gives you a bit more of a feeling of where you've come from and your place in this world. And so it was great. And to be able to see not just from our own family, like for me, Scotland, and for Julie, it's German and Syria, but to see your spouse's families in that same sort of context gives you a very full feeling as to where we came from to meet in a bus stop in Vancouver, you know, just sort of a random occurrence, and suddenly it's got this foundation. It's really quite magical.
How much did all this cost? Was it a costly proposition?
I'd say the costliest part of it was building and designing the boat. We spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out what would be the best boat for a trip like this, and ultimately we decided, well, there's not really anything on the market that suits our needs, so we designed the boats, and we designed them so that they would be seaworthy enough to handle rough weather in the North Sea and the Black Sea, but yet be maneuverable and fast on canals and rivers, at the same time, we knew that there'd be stretches, long stretches, that we'd have to portage, so we wanted to be able to pull the boats on a bicycle. So that's where the design came in, and we spent about 6 months designing and building them, and then we had to ship them to the north of Scotland using a container on a freighter, and so that's also quite costly. But for expenses on the expedition, most of the time we would camp and we would buy our food in grocery stores along the way, so that helped keep the cost lower.
And what's the next adventure for the both of you?
Well, I think for our next adventure, we're actually going to return to the Middle East. We didn't get to spend enough time when we were there. It was only 4 days in Syria. So we want to return and do a trek through the Middle East following an ancient olive trading route. My family has an olive farm, and it really sparked an interest in both of us in finding out more about olives and olive oil and how things used to be there.
Colin and Julie, this has been an interesting view on your journey and the world, for that matter. It's a great read. Congratulations on the book, and continued good luck with it.
Well, thank you so much, Joseph. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us on.
You're very welcome. The book is called Road Trip from Scotland to Syria by Orr. It's published by Doubleday. Visit their website, angusadventures.com. Colin and Julie Angus on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plana.